All right, let's dive deep into asthma. We're going to be using the notes that you sent us, labeled pasted text, to really break down all the details.
Okay, sounds
So to
good.
kick things off, when you hear the term asthma, what immediately pops into your head?
I think a lot of people, the first thing they think of is wheezing or, struggling to breathe.
Yeah, makes
But
sense.
asthma is actually, a lot more complicated than that. The source that we have here describes it as a chronic inflammatory disorder of the airways.
Chronic inflammatory disorder. So it's not just a temporary thing, huh? This inflammation is hanging around and causing problems.
Yeah, that's right.
What does that actually mean for someone who's dealing with asthma day to day?
Well, it means that the airways are kind of constantly irritated and really sensitive, and that makes them, prone to overreacting.
Overreacting to what exactly?
Well, to different triggers.
Okay, so that overreacting is what leads to those breathing difficulties, the classic asthma symptoms.
Yeah, exactly. And to kind of really grasp how complicated asthma is, this source material breaks down what's called the pathophysiology into three main features:
Okay, three main features.
airway hyperresponsiveness,
Okay.
airway inflammation, and airway remodeling.
Okay, three big terms. Let's break them down.
Sure.
What is airway hyperresponsiveness?
Okay, so think about your airways, like
Yeah.
a security system, right?
Okay.
And with asthma, this system it's like super sensitive. Airway hyperresponsiveness means your airways overreact to things that wouldn't bother, most
Yeah.
people.
Okay.
Things like pollen or dust or cold air,
Got it.
even exercise.
So they're not just sensitive, they're hypersensitive. It's
Exactly.
like the alarm is constantly going off, even if there's no real threat.
Exactly, yeah. A perfect way to put it. And this overreaction then leads to bronchospasm, which is basically a tightening of the muscles around the airways, and that makes it harder to breathe.
Okay, that makes sense.
And the more reactive your airways are, the more severe your asthma can be.
Okay, so it sounds like controlling this hyper-responsiveness is really important if you want to manage asthma.
Absolutely.
Is there any way to like turn down that sensitivity?
Well, that's where that second key feature comes into play, airway inflammation.
Okay.
So reducing that inflammation can actually help to calm down those hyperreactive airways.
Less inflammation, less overreaction. Makes sense.
Yeah.
But what's actually happening in the airways when we talk about inflammation?
Right. So remember we were talking about it's like a party.
Oh, yeah, the party in the airways.
Yeah, so it's like a party where things are getting, a bit out of control. And with asthma, it's kind of a similar scene playing out in the airways.
Okay.
We've got these inflammatory cells like mast cells,
Okay.
eosinophils, and T lymphocytes.
Wow, those are some pretty big words. Can we like
Yeah.
break down who these partygoers are and what they're doing to cause so much trouble?
Of course, yeah. So mast cells are like those really excited partygoers that are setting off the fireworks. They release histamine and other chemicals that cause like immediate bronchospasm. So they make those airways tighten up.
So they're the ones that trigger that sudden feeling of like, you can't breathe.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
And then we've got eosinophils. They're kind of like the guests who are spilling their drinks everywhere, making a big sticky mess.
Okay.
They release substances that actually damage the lining of the airways.
So they're not just causing problems right now, they're actually like harming the structure of the airways over
Yeah,
time.
that's right,
Like,
unfortunately.
ah. Oh.
And then we've got the T lymphocytes. They're kind of like the gossip mongers. They just stir up trouble and they orchestrate the inflammatory response and they call in more troublemakers to keep the party going longer.
So it sounds like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
All this inflammation, it can't be good for the airways in the long run.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. If this inflammation isn't controlled, it can lead to that third key feature that we talked about, the airway remodeling.
Airway remodeling, that sounds pretty serious. What does that actually look like in the airways?
Okay, so think of it this way. If this inflammatory party keeps going on for too long, it starts to cause damage to the house. So over time, this inflammation, it makes the walls of the airways thicker and less flexible, and it can even lead to like excess mucus production.
So instead of a nice open airway, it's more like trying to breathe through a straw.
Exactly, that's a great analogy. And all this airway remodeling can then lead to airflow obstruction that's much harder to reverse.
Yeah.
So breathing becomes a lot more difficult.
It's a scary thought to have your airways permanently changed because of inflammation. So it really highlights why it's so important to get asthma under control as early as possible.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've got this inflammatory party happening in the airways, but what actually triggers these symptoms in the first place? What gets the party started?
Well, let's start by talking about allergens.
Yep.
So for a lot of people with asthma, exposure to things like pollen, dust mites, mold, pet dander, or even cockroach waste can set off that whole cascade of inflammation.
It's amazing how something so tiny, like a dust mite, can cause such a big reaction in the body.
It is. And, you know, sensitivity to these allergens is actually a major risk factor for developing asthma.
Yeah.
Especially in children.
Speaking of things that can trigger asthma, what about exercise? I've heard of exercise-induced asthma.
Right.
But how can physical activity, which we always think of as a good thing, how can that trigger asthma symptoms?
It's a great question, and it really shows how complex asthma is. We don't fully understand exactly how it works, but we think that when your body is regulating fluids during exercise, it might be triggering those mast cells we talked about.
Oh, great. Yeah.
To release their inflammatory mediators, and that leads to bronchospasm.
So it's like exercise itself is setting off those fireworks in the airways.
That's crazy. Yeah. I actually have a friend who, he has this, and it really surprised him when he was diagnosed because he's very athletic otherwise. Yeah, that's not uncommon.
Right.
It really highlights how individual asthma triggers can be. You know, it's not always the same things for everyone.
Okay, so we've got allergens, we've got exercise potential triggers. Are there any other environmental factors that come into play?
Yeah, so viral respiratory infections, especially early in childhood, can increase the risk of someone developing asthma later on.
Okay.
Things like RSV and rhinovirus, which are very common, are often involved in those early wheezing episodes that we see in kids. And sometimes that can set the stage for asthma.
So childhood illnesses can have like a long-term impact on respiratory health. That's not something I'd really considered before.
Yeah, it's an important link to be aware of. And speaking of things that impact respiratory health, we can't forget about tobacco smoke exposure.
Right. Smoking is bad for you generally, but especially for people with asthma.
Yeah, absolutely. Exposure to tobacco smoke both before and after birth really increases the likelihood of developing asthma and wheezing. It can make asthma harder to control and even make medications less effective.
Wow. So it sounds like avoiding tobacco smoke, both first and secondhand, is absolutely crucial for anyone with asthma or who might be at risk of developing it.
It really is.
Okay, so we've got those childhood infections, tobacco smoke. Are there any other, like, environmental villains out there that we need to watch out for?
Well, air pollution is another factor, although the research is still kind of ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
Studies have linked high levels of ozone, which is a component of smog,
right,
to an increased risk of asthma, especially in children who are active outdoors.
So it's not just what we're breathing inside, it's the quality of the air outside too.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Especially for people who live in, you know, big cities with high levels of pollution.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there are occupational exposures.
Right.
Certain jobs that expose you to, you know, fumes and gases and dust.
Yeah, that can lead to something called occupational asthma.
Wow, it's amazing how our environment can have such a big impact on our health. So we've covered allergens, exercise, infections, tobacco smoke, air pollution, and occupational exposures. All these things can trigger asthma or make you more likely to develop it.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other risk factors we should be aware of?
Yeah, there are a few more key ones. So family history is a strong predictor.
Okay.
If you have a parent or a sibling with asthma, you're more likely to develop it yourself.
So there's a genetic component to this as well.
There is, yeah. And also having other allergic conditions like atopic dermatitis, which is also known as eczema or hay fever, also increases your risk.
So it seems like if you're prone to allergies, you might be more susceptible to developing asthma as well.
Yeah, they often go hand in hand.
Are there any other factors besides, you know, genetics and allergies that can increase someone's risk?
Yeah. So interestingly, research has shown a link between obesity and a higher risk of asthma.
Okay.
And it's thought that, you know, excess weight might contribute to inflammation throughout the body, including in the airways.
So maintaining a healthy weight is good for overall health, but it could also play a role in managing asthma risks.
Exactly. Yeah, it's all connected.
Wow, we've covered a lot of ground. Asthma is clearly a very complex condition with a lot of different contributing factors.
Yeah, it is.
But the good news is we have guidelines to help navigate diagnosis and management.
That's right. And here in the UK, we have the latest guidelines, which were just published in November 2024.
Okay.
And these guidelines offer evidence-based recommendations for healthcare professionals on how to diagnose, monitor, and manage chronic asthma.
That's reassuring to know. Can you give us a quick rundown of what these guidelines cover? What are some of the key takeaways for someone with asthma?
Sure. So when it comes to diagnosis,
yeah,
the guidelines really emphasize the importance of a thorough assessment.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts with a detailed medical history, a physical exam, and then objective tests like spirometry are crucial to actually confirm the diagnosis.
Spirometry, that's the one where you blow into the tube, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It measures how much air you can breathe in and out and how fast you can exhale. And that helps us to determine how severe the airflow obstruction is.
So it's not just about listening to the lungs. It's about getting these concrete measurements of lung function.
Yeah.
Okay, so once a diagnosis is made, what about monitoring asthma? How do these guidelines address that?
So monitoring is all about keeping track of how well your asthma is controlled and how you're responding to treatment.
Okay.
The guidelines recommend regular assessments of your symptoms, lung function tests, and other measures that are tailored to you.
So it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. The treatment is really individualized based on the person's situation.
Exactly, yeah. And speaking of treatment, the guidelines offer a really comprehensive approach to managing asthma, but I think that's a good place to pause and we can pick it up in part two.
You're right, we've covered a lot of ground already, and I don't want to overwhelm our listener. We'll be back in just a moment to dive deeper into those management strategies from the UK guidelines. Welcome back to our deep dive on asthma. Before the break, we were just starting to talk about the UK guidelines for asthma management.
Right.
So I'm really curious to learn more about the specific strategies they recommend.
Well, one of the key principles that the guidelines emphasize is personalized care.
Okay.
It's all about tailoring the management plan to the individual.
So it's not like there's this magic cure for everybody.
No.
It's really about creating a custom plan for each person based on their age and severity and triggers.
Exactly.
And even their lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, let's talk meds. What are some of the main medications that are used to manage asthma?
Sure. So inhaled corticosteroids.
Okay.
Or the first line therapy for most people.
Okay.
You might be familiar with these as the preventers.
Oh, right. Yeah. My friend with asthma, he uses a preventer inhaler every day. He says it helps keep the inflammation down.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So inhaled corticosteroids, they work by reducing that airway inflammation. And by taking them regularly, you're basically stopping that inflammatory party from even getting started.
So it's like a proactive approach.
Exactly.
Rather than just waiting to react when symptoms flare up.
Exactly.
But what happens when symptoms do strike, even with the preventers?
Well, that's where the relievers come in.
Okay.
Which are also known as bronchodilators.
Oh, yeah, the rescue inhaler.
Exactly.
Yeah, my friend uses that when he's having an asthma attack or if he feels that tightness in his chest.
Right. So those bronchodilators work really quickly to relax the muscles around the airways.
Mm-hmm.
So that provides quick relief from things like wheezing and shortness of breath.
So you've got the preventers to manage inflammation over the long term, and then the relievers for that immediate relief when you need it.
Exactly.
So are there any other types of medications that people with asthma might use?
Yeah. So depending on the person and the severity of their asthma, there might be other medications added to the mix.
Okay.
Things like leukotriene modifiers or long-acting muscarinic antagonists.
Yeah, okay.
These target different parts of that inflammatory process that we were talking about.
So it's like a whole arsenal to target those party guests in the airways.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And the choice of which medications to use and how to use them will really depend on a lot of factors like your age, if you're pregnant or breastfeeding, any other medical conditions.
Mm-hmm.
The guidelines actually have specific recommendations for all those situations.
Okay, so medications are clearly like a cornerstone of asthma management.
Yeah.
But what about lifestyle?
Yeah.
Do lifestyle changes play a role in managing asthma, or is it all about the meds?
No, lifestyle plays a huge role.
Okay.
The guidelines really emphasize that medication is just one part of the picture.
Mm.
What we call non-pharmacological interventions are just as important.
That makes sense. You can't just pop a pill and expect everything to be fine.
No, not at all.
So what are some examples of these non-pharmacological interventions? What kind of things can people do?
Well, one of the most important things is identifying and avoiding your triggers.
Okay.
So we talked about those common triggers like allergens and exercise and tobacco smoke and air pollution.
Yeah.
So by minimizing exposure to those triggers, you can reduce the likelihood of your airways getting irritated.
So it's about being aware of your own personal triggers and making choices to avoid them.
Yeah.
What about exercise? I mean, we know that can be a trigger for some people.
Right.
But regular physical activity is important for everyone's health, including people with asthma. So how do you kind of balance those two things?
Right. Good question. It's about finding activities that you can tolerate and, gradually increasing the intensity.
Mm-hmm.
Always having your reliever inhaler handy just in case you need it.
Okay.
Sometimes warming up slowly can help, or choosing exercises that don't involve a lot of heavy breathing. And of course, if you have exercise-induced asthma, you want to avoid exercising in cold, dry air.
So it's about working with your doctor to find a plan that's both safe and effective.
Exactly.
What about things like diet and weight management? Do they play a role?
Yeah, so maintaining a healthy weight is, you know, beneficial for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But for people with asthma, it can actually improve your symptoms.
Okay.
And reduce the risk of exacerbations.
We talked earlier about that link between obesity and increased inflammation. So it makes sense that managing your weight could help manage your asthma, too.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all connected.
Are there any other lifestyle factors that can impact asthma?
Yeah. So the guidelines also highlight the importance of promoting good mental health.
That's an interesting one. What's the connection between mental health and asthma?
Well, living with a chronic condition like asthma can be stressful.
Yeah.
And stress and anxiety can actually worsen asthma symptoms.
Okay.
So using techniques like mindfulness and relaxation exercises and getting enough sleep
can help manage that stress and in turn improve your asthma control.
So it sounds like taking this kind of holistic view of health, considering the physical and the mental and the emotional, is really important for managing asthma effectively.
Absolutely.
It's not just about treating the lungs, it's about treating the whole person.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
And another crucial aspect highlighted in the guidelines is promoting treatment adherence.
Right.
So making sure that people are actually taking their medication as prescribed.
Yeah.
And using their inhalers correctly.
Exactly. Because it's one thing to have a treatment plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's another to actually follow it consistently.
Right.
So the guidelines, they really emphasize the importance of education and communication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, healthcare providers really need to take the time to explain the medications, how they work, why they're important.
Yeah, I imagine that having a good relationship with your doctor or your asthma nurse is key here.
Absolutely.
You need to feel comfortable asking questions, voicing any concerns you might have.
It's all about creating a partnership between the healthcare provider and the person with asthma.
And what about the role of self-management?
Yeah.
How can people like empower themselves to take control of their asthma?
Yeah, so self-management is huge, and the guidelines really stress that the importance of, you know, equipping people with the knowledge and skills.
Mm-hmm.
They need to manage their condition effectively.
Okay.
So this includes things like recognizing those early warning signs of a flare-up, having a personalized action plan in place, knowing when to seek help.
So it's about becoming an expert in your own asthma.
Exactly.
Knowing your triggers, recognizing your symptoms, and having a plan for what to do when things start to go south.
Right. And this goes hand in hand with something called risk stratified care.
Yeah.
Which is another key principle in the guidelines.
Okay. Risk stratified care. That sounds a little technical.
Yeah. So basically, it just means identifying those individuals who are at higher risk of having those severe asthma attacks, or what we call exacerbations,
mm-hmm.
and tailoring their management accordingly.
So it's about being more proactive in the care of those who are most vulnerable.
Exactly.
Right.
Making sure they have the support and resources they need.
And finally, the guidelines emphasize coordinated care.
Right.
So making sure that everyone involved in the person's care is on the same page.
Exactly. Yeah. So this means seamless communication between primary care providers, specialists like respiratory physicians, and any other healthcare professionals involved.
So there's a real emphasis on teamwork and communication in these guidelines.
Absolutely.
It's not just about the individual with asthma and their doctor, but about creating this whole support system to help them manage their condition.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It really does take a village.
Besides the main guidelines, you mentioned that there's also something called the joint asthma pathway.
Right.
So tell me about that. What is it and how is it different from the main guidelines we've been discussing?
Okay, so the joint asthma pathway basically combines recommendations and resources from three key organizations.
Okay.
The British Thoracic Society, or BTS, the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, or nice DRO, and the Scottish Intercollegiate Guidelines Network, or SIGN.
Okay.
All into a single, more comprehensive document.
So it's kind of like a one-stop shop for healthcare professionals.
Yeah.
To find all the info they need.
Exactly. And it actually goes beyond the scope of the main guidelines, covering some of the more challenging aspects of asthma care.
Like what?
Things like managing difficult or severe asthma.
Difficult and severe asthma, those sound pretty serious.
Yeah, they can be, but thankfully the joint asthma pathway includes guidance on how to manage those more complex cases, and it also provides really important information on how to manage acute asthma attacks, which can be life-threatening.
It must be a huge relief for both healthcare professionals and people with asthma.
Yeah.
To have such specific guidance for those really challenging situations.
Absolutely. It shows a real commitment to improving the lives of people with asthma.
We've covered so much in this section.
Yeah, we have.
These guidelines and pathways are so comprehensive.
Mm.
It really feels like there's a roadmap for managing asthma, from diagnosis and monitoring to treatment and self-management.
I agree. The UK has really made some great strides in developing these evidence-based guidelines for asthma care.
Well, I'm excited to wrap up this deep dive in part three and really solidify what all of this means for our listeners. So we'll be back in just a moment.
And we're back for the final part of our asthma deep dive. We've gone through a lot, haven't we? From how the airways actually work.
Yeah, we have.
To these really comprehensive UK guidelines for managing this complex condition.
Yeah, I think even with all the complexities, the main point is that asthma is manageable.
It doesn't have to control your life.
Right.
And one thing that really stood out to me was the emphasis on, like, personalized care.
Absolutely.
It's not one size fits all.
No, it's about finding what works best for each individual person.
It's about each person, you know, really understanding their own asthma, working with their healthcare providers to find the plan that works best for them.
And, you know, speaking of empowerment, I was really struck by that focus on self-management techniques.
Yeah.
It's not just about, you know, doing what the doctor says.
No.
It's about taking an active role in your own health.
Absolutely. And, you know, the guidelines emphasize how important it is to educate people about asthma, helping them understand their triggers, their medications, and giving them the tools to develop a personalized action plan.
Yeah, because knowledge is power.
Absolutely.
So for our listener out there, you know, they've been with us this whole time absorbing all this info about asthma. What's the one message you want them to take away from this deep dive?
I would say asthma is a chronic condition, but it doesn't have to define you. With the right knowledge, tools, and support, you can still live a full and active life. Don't be afraid to ask questions and advocate for yourself and find healthcare providers who will really listen to you.
That's great advice. So to wrap things up, let's leave our listener with a question to think about. Now that you understand asthma better, what steps can you take to manage your condition or even minimize your risk?
It's a great question to consider. And remember those resources that you provided, labeled pasted text. They're a fantastic place to start learning even more. And, you know, don't hesitate to reach out to your healthcare provider if you have any questions or concerns.
Great advice. Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into asthma. We hope you found it informative and empowering. Until next time, keep learning, keep exploring, and keep breathing easy.